You're listening to Federal Prison Authority Presents Around the Block with Bruce Cameron and Susan Giddings, only on LA Talk Radio.
Well, hello, everybody, and welcome. Hey, and welcome to another exciting episode of Federal Prison Authority Presents Around the Block. And so, happy Mother's Day to everybody who that applies to. Hope you had a good Mother's Day yesterday. So, and I'm sure you had a good Mother's Day, right, Sue?
I did. Got to hear from all of them and all my grown kids and checked in with mom and had a good day.
Even though the kids are grown, it's still like herding cats sometimes, isn't it? Maybe just for me. But
absolutely. You know, when they were little, their problems were little. And now that they're grown, their problems have grown with it.
Good point.
You know, when they were little, you could just send them to their rooms.
That's right. No longer. All right. Well, folks, you know, we've been putting that we have a new edition of our First Step Act book coming out. And Susan's going to detail all the,
actually, it is out.
It is out.
It went live. It actually went a little faster than we thought. We said we were going to have it announced last week. On last week's show, we'd be announcing, and we actually expected it to go live today, and it went live Friday, Thursday.
Right. It did. So
Friday, I think.
So, folks, don't worry about it, because if you never had the book, the only book that's available in blue is the new edition. So it's not like there's an old edition, right? The old edition's out, or is there?
Because right now the new edition is only available in softback. So the first edition is still available via Kindle and in Spanish language. Okay. So the Kindle version is not, you know, you and I had talked about it with the charts and graphs that we put in the book. It makes it's not real conducive to a Kindle version,
right?
So we weren't going to look at a second edition for the Kindle, but we would leave it up there for the time being, and you know, we might explore that. It's just like I said, there's too many graphs and charts to make it conducive for a Kindle. Sure. So,
and what's the price up to now? It was just the book is, we have more book, folks, so it costs more to print, but what's the new price now?
It's $16.99. We still wanted to keep it affordable. There's new content in it. There's actually four new chapters, and probably three or four other chapters have been significantly expanded on. So we tackled the conditional calculators. You know, that's been a challenge for many people to wrap their head around. And so we devoted a full chapter to that. We just kind of, In the last book, the conditional release date calculator was out, and we just kind of touched on it. We've expanded that content to a full chapter. We also, because we've really seen this last year, and particularly in the last, 6 months or so, we have seen issues related to the Second Chance Act, and right, understanding that and the background of that and how that interacts or doesn't interact really with the First Step Act. So we did add a full chapter on the Second Chance Act. We kind of pulled in that history and perspective in terms of how Halfway House functioned before the Second Chance Act, and really the expansion of Halfway House following the passage of the Second Chance Act. And so that was real important. You and I don't know how many times we explained those issues on the Facebook page, you know, so that was an important add. We also added a chapter on DC offenders. We periodically get questions, you know, when something going to happen for DC offenders? And, tackled that. And for our listeners, for DC code, unfortunately, the DC statute was horribly, horribly written, and has made the implementation impossible. or I should say, maybe not impossible is not the right word, extraordinarily challenging. And the way they wrote it, they actually exclude a lot of individuals. I don't think they did it intentionally. I think their intention was to have time credits available for all or a great number of DC code individuals. But the way they wrote it, they excluded pretty much everybody convicted in the last 25 years. Huh. Like I said, I don't think that was their intention at all. We wanted to tackle that topic as kind of controversial as that is.
Okay. So, and what about aliens?
You know, not a whole lot has changed on that front. We did include the most current information in terms of whether or not they're getting credit and how they're getting credit. sorry, I apologize. Got a little tickle going on today. But for the DC offender, I'm sorry, for the non-US citizens, it's just very convoluted. You would think it's pretty straightforward. If they don't have a final order of deportation, they don't get credit at all. Under the current interpretation, there's a question of how much credit they're getting. They are getting credit, but it's problematic for the Bureau because they're relying on other agencies to provide documentation. And sometimes the documentation, the Bureau is told, oh, this individual has a final order, and then later finds out they don't, or they've done all the release paperwork, they're preparing to go out, and then immigration officials drop a detainer saying, oh, no. And so it's problematic, and it's really not fair to both the non-U.S. citizens in terms of really knowing their status, and it's also not fair to Bureau employees who are already shorthanded and have a lot of work-related issues that we see in the news in terms of staff shortages, for them to have to be redoing paperwork because at the last minute something changed.
Right. So a lot going on there. Now, you'd mentioned earlier a little bit about the conditional calculator, and that's a very important aspect of all this. Particularly,
absolutely.
And I want to harken back to something we talked about on the show, and we're going to get to it, is that currently all the rosters or credit sheets really don't have a accurate home confinement, let's say home confinement eligibility date that's based on earned.
Go ahead. It's based on the earned credit. It's not based on the projected. Right, the conditional credit.
Yeah.
Right.
And that's been a challenge for people because you'd want to know that, because in theory you'd want your RRC placement to precede that date many times if possible, right? The reason why we say that, it's not that we're against direct home confinement, it's just that the parlance of a longer placement, it's usually before the home confinement eligibility date, and the person kind of gets there, gets settled, gets a job, gets their car, gets whatever they need ready at the house, so that then they can transfer into home confinement, okay?
Right.
But also gets the person out of prison sooner when you have that. So hopefully you'll get to the that part of the calculation and stuff. So
you know, right now there are two conditional calculators. There's one for the release date and one for the conditional placement date. The calculator that would be the conditional home confinement piece of the puzzle. While I was still employed, we were talking about it. So again, it's something that the Bureau's aware would be beneficial, not just for the case managers who are trying to do the paperwork, but the residential reentry folks who are trying to plan and project bed space and things like that. So it's again, it's a good tool. But like many other things going on in the Bureau right now, there's only a finite amount of resources. And at this moment, I'm not even talking money. I'm talking time and people to develop these additional planning tools, which, again, have a positive and important role for folks. But the focus is on getting the individuals their time credits. As an example, the recent change we saw just in the last few months with moving to overnight calculations for individuals in the community so that they're capturing their credit sooner and actually getting out on or very close to that conditional release date.
So let's stop there. So this is a real important thing because the people that are in custody or in a prison, their dates only update so often whenever the month
at the end of the month ish.
Whenever the button's pushed, right. The end of the month ish. And we've seen that linger on for weeks after, right? And it's been very, I don't want to say capricious, but we just kind of never know when they were going to do it, right? It was, you know.
It's ish the end of the month, but depending on when the end of the month falls, mm-hmm. because if they just did it on the last day, weekend of the month, that would be an easy option. If they did it every time on the last weekend of the month, there would be individuals who wouldn't get credit. Because sometimes the last weekend of the month is the 24th or 25th of the month, 23rd, 24th. We've seen some very, very early last weekends versus some very late last weekends. So when they first started looking at this, it was going to be the last weekend of the month, or I should say the last weekend closest to the end of the month. And sometimes that's the first weekend of the month. Sometimes that's a split, 31st and 1st. Sometimes it is the 27th, 28th, somewhere around the close to the end of the month. But if they do the calculation and they just, without any variation, just say we're going to do the last weekend of the month, we'll have folks, large numbers of folks who won't get credit. Because if the month before, the last weekend was late in the month, and this month, the last weekend is earlier, you're going to see an entire population have not 30 days. And so that was why they made that decision to be flexible about when they were going to post. So now this last couple of months, we saw extra posts, and that was a function of them trying to model some strategies that would allow the calculations to capture those folks as they're getting to the end of their sentence.
So if a person is in an RRC or home confinement, how often is their date?
It is now being done overnight. And that's a function of the fact that, one, it's a substantially smaller population.
Every day, every night?
Overnight.
Wow.
Yes. And it's because it's such a small population. I mean, when you consider the entire population of the Bureau is, 156,000. And whether an individual is eligible or not, the application has to touch that record to make sure nothing has changed since the previous month. So it has to touch every record. Now you take the individuals who are in the community and they can be kind of separated out within the computer system, they can be separated out and just look at them. And you're talking, 12,000-13,000 plus or minus. And those can be run in, an hour and a half at most. So running them overnight in the wee hours of the morning when nothing else was going on.
Right.
It moves pretty quickly.
Okay. So that's good. That's good to know that it's every night mm-hmm. for the folks in the community. So that's good
Absolutely.
To know.
Absolutely.
And the thing that the BOP wants to desperately avoid, they don't want to hold a person in custody a minute longer than they have to. So having those daily updates can help more ensure that that doesn't happen.
Right.
Because they'll have up-to-date accruals.
Now, there are still going to be situations where the conditional release date, because it is calculated based on pure 30-day increments, that a person still won't hit their conditional release date. We looked at a case this week, right? So they have enough time, but when they get to their 30th day and the credit posts, they're only going to have less than 15 days left. So they're still not releasing on their conditional release date. Because while the calendar looks at a perfect scenario, life doesn't. So, yeah.
So what would be, so it would be.
And it's a function of the law. It's actually a function of the law because it doesn't. Yeah. It doesn't allow for prorated and partial credit.
No, yeah, I understand.
So, that.
And
yeah.
RDAP is up to a year and up to 9 months and up to. It doesn't say a fixed time. But, and I haven't asked you this question, but you're kind of a numbers person. So, theoretically, somebody's in the halfway house or home confinement and they don't have enough. So, when the button's pushed or whatever to, could you see somebody then it's just a 15-day delay or what's the...
It's less than 15 delay. It ends up being less than that. So what we were seeing before is somebody might hit their 30th day mid-month on the 15th. Mm-hmm. And if the app doesn't run until the end of the month, then they're literally sitting there accumulating another 15 days of programming days until the app runs to push their date back, where now they are running the app, they're being captured. So on the 30th day, it's now going, oh, you now have 30 days. We're going to drop the credit.
And
so where before the right. difference between a conditional date and actually getting out was more than 15 days because there was still the issue of having to wait until the end of the month. Now we're looking at situations where if there is a difference, it's less than that.
So what is the best day of the month for somebody to self-surrender to the full-on BOP joint institution?
We recommend voluntary surrendering between the 25th and the end of the month.
Okay. So it's toward the back half. Okay. So
yes.
I can see a time where we're going to be doing these judgment and commitment order, you know, things and adding that in. Your well, honor, you know, we in order.
Well, and
this,
here's yeah. the interesting part is for individuals who get super short sentences, right? Like they're realistically not looking at halfway house because they got a little 4 month or a little 6 month placement, yeah. right?
But they're still earning.
They're still earning. So that for them, it's really important that they're self-surrendering in that
window.
In that window. So because they're still doing only a monthly update. So when you walk in, you voluntarily right. surrender, say, the 27th of the month or the 25th of the month.
That's right. Those folks are at the mercy of that monthly update. And that's it.
That's
they're not going to ever reach a halfway house. Their sentence is way too short.
Their sentence is way too short.
Yeah.
So then what happens is, so now you voluntarily surrender your first month and it's late in the month, 25th, 26th. The next month, you're at anywhere from 32 to 35 days, 36 days, depending on when they run the calculator. Yeah. And your team has to happen within 28 days. So if you're voluntary surrendering by, say, the 25th of the month, you're going to be coming to team probably no later than the 21st, 22nd of the month, which means everything's in the computer when the calculator runs.
Yeah.
Because if it's not in the computer, nothing happens.
And folks, we're talking about your designated facility. We're not talking about going to Oklahoma City or
the Marshalls,
Victorville 2 holdover or anything like that. We're talking Right. Going to your designated facility. And
of course, we always talk about that when we're talking with our pre-sentence individuals, like surrender directly to the institution. Avoid surrendering to the marshals.
If at all possible. Absolutely.
Yes.
Absolutely.
Because you will go on the circuit ride.
Because I know we have, it seems like at least one or two of our females, but anyway, that have the, when they came in and versus when the button gets pushed, and I was aware of that, and man, it makes a difference. I mean, it does. On that short sentence, man, that makes a difference. So, you 100%. Know, we're yeah. I mean, this is 100% not blowing smoke, man. What we say, get there in that window, because you're going to be sitting there a little bit longer doing your time. So anyway, yeah, I mean, and that's it's those nuanced things, man. Who would think that, like, okay, between this date and this date toward the end of the month, this is when you want to go. People just, yeah, I mean, but.
Well,
but,
people kind of routinely just default to the first of the month. You know,
right.
And it makes a difference. Yeah. Kind of like when we talk about retirement, you know, you retire before the end of the month. You don't retire at the first of the month.
Right.
You're going to screw yourself up. So,
right.
Hey, another chapter we put in the book, yes. You and I, you know, we've talked about it here. We've talked about it on our Facebook page. We have been really starting to get verbal about the changes that need to happen in the FSA. And as a last chapter in the book, where everything else is factual, this last chapter is what Bruce and I think, but it's some of the ideas we have about some of the things that need to change. It's not all of them, but it's just a little last few pages of the book talking about our ideas and what we think.
And let me give you my two cents on this. It's almost like if you have an engine in a car and the engine isn't quite firing what it needs to do to work all the way. And so I see our feedback as a very nonpartisan, non-biased. It's like, here's the engine, the FSA, and we want this engine to be hooked up to the correct components of the Bureau of Prisons, et cetera, so that it runs the way it was designed to run. Now, it sounds like an opinion, but kind of not. I mean, I think these are more, you know, y'all get the book and read it and let us know what you think on our Facebook. But it's, you know, if that's my sense. What's your sense of it, Susan? You think?
So, you know, I think it's really interesting. Last week, there was some congressional testimony. Bureau wasn't in attendance. It was four gentlemen from four different organizations. And the one gentleman really brought up a great point. And he was talking specifically about correctional officers. But I would argue it's about the professionals across the board. And talking about those of us who are in the know, those of us who did it our entire careers, were the ones writing the policies, were the ones doing the training, were the ones doing the audits to make sure things are getting done. We are in a unique position to talk to the politicians about what they want to happen and how to make it happen. Because they are not working for the Bureau of Prisons. They don't understand the classification instrument, the initial classification program. They don't understand, you know, the review process that drug treatment specialists go through to do the DAP qualifications. You know, they're not talking to the people that are doing the work. So therefore, the work, what they are putting in the statute, isn't going to work great. It might work. It might solve part of the problems, but it's not going to run smoothly. It's not going to run cleanly. You know, going back to that engine analogy, it's not going to be firing on all cylinders, right?
Exactly.
There's a proposed statute out there right now, nothing to do with FSA, but it has to do with mailroom operations. They have not talked to the SMEs in the agency in terms of, will this proposal work? As you've written it, as you, Congressman, and it's a very important piece of legislation, named after one of our correctional system supervisors who actually died from a fentanyl exposure, by the name of Mark Fisher. But the what they wrote, one, isn't going to solve the problem. Two, is going to cost a lot of money, and they haven't funded it. They just said Bureau of Prisons do it. We call that unfunded mandates out in the public sector. And then three, it's going to create a lot of additional work for which they haven't funded the additional staff need to accomplish it. And like I said, they're wanting to accomplish something. They're wanting to do something to create a safer environment for staff. 100% on board with that. But the way they've done it will actually create additional problems, create additional expenses, and it's not going to accomplish. I mean, it may accomplish it, but it's going to do it for a lot of money that they haven't put forth in there. They haven't funded that bill. It's just there and says the Bureau's going to figure it out.
Right. Yeah. When do you think they're going to actually get out of this continuing resolution and get them a budget, for goodness sakes?
That would require folks to get along and work together. And, you know, your guess is as good as mine. You could probably, if you had that number, that date, you could probably win a lot of money in Vegas.
I mean, how long do you think that they could drag it on for?
I've seen continuing resolutions go through the entire fiscal year. And literally, like, in September, they kind of cleaned it up and passed it. So they, you know. But, yeah, I've seen continuing resolutions. And this one right now is approved through the end of the fiscal year, which means, you know, it's May. The Bureau could be under these numbers, under the FY24 budget numbers through
the end of the year,
the rest of the year.
Well, I would hope that since they're, you know, Trump is identified and picked and there's a new director seated, that this individual that's now in the director will be able to get a budget for the agency, certainly very soon after the end of September, once the new fiscal year starts.
Well, and you know, the reality is, President Trump wants him to accomplish some things, but he's got to give him the tools. Congress wants him to do some things. And if they're not going to give him the tools, then they're handicapping him walking in the door.
All right. And, you know, Marsha with all the immigration or migrant cases and Alcatraz and or doing other, you know what I mean? So it's, you know, they don't want to, they want to fund this other side of the correction experience with folks doing their time, folks doing what they're supposed to be doing, programming, staying out of trouble, earning their credits, and then able to transition to the community early.
100%.
You know, we need to invest in those folks. Because these are the folks that are going to be our neighbors. They're going to be reentering society, many of which will be entering society with really good paying jobs and, you know, careers and whatnot. So well, I just hope we can, like you said, we can find where that balance is struck and we'll see what's going forward. But nonetheless, FSA is still FSA. And it requires certain things for it to function properly. What are some other things that are in that back chapter or that other?
Well, so, you know, we've talked about the issue of home confinement and what we have going on right now. And I think I talked about this last week. You know, we've had some folks challenge the numbers we've put out there. But it's the math is there. It's in the DOJ's report from last year. About 65% of the population is not eligible for FSA credit, either because they're statutorily restricted or they have medium or high risk. All of those individuals then rely on the Second Chance Act, for halfway house placement. Within the 45% of the population, approximately, I'm sorry, 35%. Sorry, my math was off there. The 35%, there's another percentage of that, and I don't have that number. It's not publicly available. That earns time credits, but only earns time credits toward early release. So again, that group is also dependent on the Second Chance Act. And under the Second Chance Act, home confinement is still restricted to 10% or 180 days, whichever is less. And it's within that less amount, right? Are the population that's sitting here with 18, 20, 25, 30-month sentences, 36-month sentences. All these folks are going out and they are only eligible to go under the Second Chance Act. Their 10% time is limited and they're going to halfway house. And many of these folks, because they are low risk and low need individuals, they have homes to go to. If the 10% restriction wasn't there, the Bureau could do a direct home confinement placement with the approved plan.
And
working with probation to get those home inspections completed and verified, and then a direct placement could be done.
And this model is more or less, I feel, more or less been proven by CARES Act releases, where we have got guys and gals out right now, maybe to 2028, 2029, on CARES Act.
I think most of them were received clemency. I'm not sure that
right.
If there's any of those individuals still left out there, could be. I don't want to say there isn't.
But nonetheless, these individuals were on home confinement for a while. Years,
absolutely.
Right.
And not only did the Bureau's research kind of tackle that subject, but that was also another comment that was brought up in the testimony last week, is the Barr Attorney General Barr and his administration established some pretty strict criteria for individuals to go out to home confinement. And that included, we'll set aside the medically vulnerable side of that for a moment, but they had to have minimum or low risk, minimum or low security level. They couldn't have offenses that involved violence, sex offenses, terrorism. They had to have served in the, depending on their sentence, 50% of their time. Or if they were shorter, they could have a little less than 50% if they were a shorter sentence. But because of those extra guardrails on who was going to get to go out to home confinement, the numbers were much better. They saw lower recidivism when they examined those individuals that released from the home confinement. In that, now granted, it was only a 1-year study because we haven't had that much time since the releases. But in that post-release, in comparing CARES Act placements versus non-CARES Act placement, the CARES Act folks had a lower recidivism rate in their first 12 months. Don't know if that continues beyond that, but at least those, that first set of data was positive. I would argue that if you're looking at these lowest risk, lowest need individuals, clear conduct, not sex offenders, not violence, all of those, the bad stuff, right? Mm-hmm. Is you're creating a home confinement population that really becomes the cream of the crop. And you're saying, you know what? You can go to home confinement. And I think there's merit to that. I would probably be a little stricter, honestly, than AG Barr was. I would limit it to minimum risk and minimum need individuals at minimum security facilities. We were looking at, individuals with low security and low risk, if they were otherwise met all the criteria, could go to home confinement under the CARES Act. I would love to see some more research on that. Those recidivism numbers beyond the first year. I would love to see some numbers in terms of the length of time in home confinement versus those recidivism rates. I do believe, and this is me, I do believe long periods of home confinement and or halfway house are not a great idea. Right. So I would like to see some more data on there, because I think, you know, the results were kind of aggregated out among individuals who went out and had 4, 6, 8 months, maybe, as well as individuals that had a year or two. We need some more data in that area.
And yeah, there's probably, like you said, there probably is a statistical sweet spot or a sweet spot of how much that 1 to 2 year range or whatever. You and I have talked to at least one, if not several people who felt like they were going crazy. You know, it had been like longer than that period. And they were on there like, man, I can't, you know, it's really interesting how the brain adjusts, right? They felt like they were in prison again. Man, I can't do this. I can't do that. I still got to check in. I got this. I got that.
We had a client who had been out there for 3 years. And you're going to know who I'm talking about when I say it. He was living in Asheville when the hurricane came through. Right. And he was living in a disaster area. And his company, actually, he had a job offer to relocate. And because he still had, 3 or 4 years left to go, even though he had been in home confinement for 3 years, probation wasn't wanting to do a relocation plan yet. And it was all kinds of drama and everything else. And like, he was boiling water and living in a disaster zone and had an opportunity
to go somewhere
and couldn't do it because of the home confinement hoops he was jumping through. And
that's a good point.
Even the halfway house, the regional reentry offices were actually on board with transferring his home confinement status, but they needed probation, and probation was looking at, he's still 3 years out. Why are we going to talk about a relocation? So fortunately, he was granted clemency, and that solved the problem. But yeah, he was going a little batty.
You know, and in some ways, I think sometimes when I hear our members talk about home confinement and home confinement's easy, and yes, it is lower cost to the Bureau and the taxpayer. However, you know, home confinement from the RRC perspective is, well, the guy isn't coming back to the center, so it makes those job checks important. The guy's not coming back to the center, so now they're calling 2 or 3 times in the middle of the night. Oh, the guy's not coming back to the center, so when he pisses in a cup for his drug test that week, you know what I mean? Da-da-da-da. So, you know, the because the person's not there, there's more a heightened, sometimes, not all the time, but there's this more heightened awareness of the person, right? And so, and it still takes a lot of time and labor to monitor a person on home confinement. It's just not like, oh, well, they're at home, we forget about them, they come back, you know, and they come back once a week.
I literally had to have that conversation with some, and we won't name them, these some external auditors who were questioning how the Bureau had handled the CARES Act implementation, and they literally didn't understand that. I at one point in the conversation, I said, we're not just dropping them in the community and telling them to report to probation in 2 years. There's still oversight of them. There's still having to do checks in. They're still having to do your analysis. They're still having to do all of these things. And it's still a contract that the Bureau has with a provider like Salvation Army or Volunteers of America or DSMIS or GEO Group. They're the ones running these halfway houses. And the Bureau can't go to them and say, you need to hire 20 more people because we want to shove more people out.
Yeah. Or this upside down situation where the guy calls me and I said, hey man, one of our clients, they got a year, it was a blessing that before all this bad stuff kicked off. So they're sitting there. And so I'm like, hey, you guys are probably home confinement eligible. I was like, yeah, but nobody wants to do that around here. I was shocked. I'm like, what do you mean? Why don't you want to do it? Well, you know, the monitor is the size of a cigar box. And it's like, what? You know what I mean? And so, yeah, it's just easier to, you know, that's interesting. When you have an inmate, tell, you know what, I'll just stay here. life is
I'm working.
Easier.
I'm gone during the day. Yeah, I'm only sleeping here at night.
Pattern here. I'm good. I don't want to mess with it. Plus, this thing is this, and this is going to bring in that level of supervision or whatever. And so,
declining home confinement.
Boy, I don't. I'm just saying. I'm hoping and praying that was just the rarest thing I'll ever hear from somebody in an RRC.
I was kind of surprised by that.
Yeah. I mean, I called you immediately like, man, you're not going to believe this. Cause I'm sitting there, I still can't believe it to this day. I mean, I believe the guy's very sincere. He's been a straight shooter all the way through and
absolutely.
And just a real good guy, you know, but wasn't expecting that one. So that's the interesting thing about this business is like,
well, and that's the other thing is people don't realize home confinement varies from area to area. We know of some jurisdictions that they have like a wristwatch device, have the cell phones that are geolocated, and they basically have to have the cell phone within X feet of the monitoring thing. Some are still using ankle monitors of varying types. Right. And then we still have some that are on landline.
Right. So, but you know what? That's still, anyway, that's still just because our home confinement, because we had a case where the guy was he at his job? Was he next door? You know what I mean? And but I thought my job allowed me to do this. And no, your job is actually this. Oh, I thought that as long as I was wearing my uniform, I could go across town. Anyway, just interesting stuff that, man, so when folks go into the community custody side of this, it is interesting and it's just not as easy as it sounds. It sounds glamorous. And it is. We want them out there for sure. But there's still work, you know, there's still work that has to take place daily on both sides of the coin.
If the Bureau and bigger than the Bureau, if the government were to look at the expansion of home confinement, like significant expansion, they really need to kind of approach it from a different model, not Second Chance Act, of pre-release needs-based placement, not First Step Act award, but they're actually looking at community incarceration. You know, it's a different model. It needs to be approached differently.
This isn't the day reporting center, is it?
No. I'm talking about if the idea is to move towards some kind of longer home confinement based population.
Right.
You know,
like
there's
a direct court commitment of sorts.
Pretty much, right. You know, there's an argument to be made. It's less expensive to have someone in home confinement than it is to be incarcerated in a satellite camp. And a satellite camp is without fences. For those who aren't familiar out there, who aren't familiar, satellite camps and federal prison camps are minimum security facilities. They don't have fences around them. There are a couple with fences around them, but they're not necessarily there to keep individuals in. They're there to keep others out. But their minimum security facilities, the offenders are basically there on their honor to stay put. And so the argument is, well, if you're not behind a fence, if you're essentially in a non-secure environment, but you're counted five times a day and you're here, why not? And that's a legitimate argument. You know, prison is expensive. We know this. But if you're going to change a model, if you're going to have this community-based incarceration where a person is looking at either a halfway house home confinement or a home confinement, extended home confinement, where that's their sentence. They're sentenced to a two-year term, and because of their assessment, and we look at, you know, their risk and their need, it's like, nope, so, you can do your sentence at home.
So I was,
they need a different model.
Right. And so I was contacted, you don't know this, but I was contacted by one of my former brethren, who's a woman, but and she's helping on a solicitation for an RRC that will have services and classes and like an NRDAP, and will have other types of classes and other types of vocational stuff in the RRC to prepare for that, what you're just saying right there, in the event that they do this kind of community-based custody at a facility. You know, I'm thinking of places like a Houston, or, you know, I'm familiar with these areas. Or it doesn't have to be Houston, but a place with some size,
right?
They could have. And the reason why I said size is because you got to have those mandates. You got to have at least 100, if not more, inmates in there to justify the mandate rate and to justify the programming. I mean, they're going to hire
Absolutely.
Professionals. The Bureau's not going to let a GED drug treatment specialist go in there or whatever. Nothing wrong with that, but just work. You know what I mean? The people are just going to have
right.
to be qualified and educated and this and that and the other. And
Absolutely.
They're going to have to pay for staff, you know, but
and where the individuals are going to be living at home
yeah.
and working, and then they're coming into the yeah. center, whether it's for GED classes or drug
right.
treatment or
Absolutely.
Other evidence-based recidivism-reducing programs, and it'll be this kind of holistic. I think it's a fantastic idea.
Don't you remember the community treatment centers when we first started, the CTCs they were called?
Yeah.
The BOP owned them and all that, so...
Absolutely.
But anyway,
that's a different yeah. model, and that's going to require a different type of funding. And, you know, the reality is
right.
in terms of the non prison population, those civilians out there whose lives have not been touched by this, giving money to prisons or to halfway houses or to community-based programs, you know, it's not exciting. It's not sexy, you know, and the support has to be there. People can be verbally can say, oh yeah, I'm all for rehabilitation. I'm all for reentry, but not in my neighborhood, not in my community. Why don't you put it over there?
Right. Right. Mm-hmm.
And you know, it really takes kind of a change in paradigm on how we think about this.
Right. I know. So, yes. And so, but you know what? We'll be ready for those ideas and how to expand and what to do and how to do it. I'm sure, you know, BOP has had privatization divisions back in the day. And so be blowing the dust off of some of those guys and ladies, right? Blowing the dust off that and seeing how that may take place. Again, these were just... We're just talking maybe in the future type stuff here, folks.
So it's ideas.
Don't get excited.
I would love to see our detention centers
yeah.
Because they are located in major metropolitan areas where the mandate rate for halfway houses is so high.
Right.
Would love to see our right. detention centers, you know, be able to allocate some resources to, you know, functioning as a community
right.
incarceration hub.
Right. Exactly. So that would be good. Well, we're under 2 minutes, so don't want to cut it short, but here we go at another round table discussion of sorts. But again, our book is still and now available on Amazon. Let me go get it. Here it is. The cover looks basically the same, right?
Yep. This cover is the same. It has a second edition stamp on it.
Second edition. But so go ahead and get that book. Have it sent to your loved ones and keep one at the house. and we'll be here next week. But, by the way, see us on our Facebook group, Early Release from Federal Prison, First Step Act, our First Step Act YouTube channel. And those are two places we'll answer all your questions. Or tag us or send a direct message to me on Facebook. I'll get with you. Maybe a couple of hours or something, or the next business day, but we will certainly get with you. So anything yeah. else, Susan, before we get out?
Just want to remind folks that if they have questions, if they have topics they want to see us discuss, please either message us via Facebook, via Bruce's DMs, as he says, or via YouTube, where the videos are posted. Because we want to make sure we're bringing relevant information to you every week. You know, we'll sit up here and talk about anything. And
I know
talk
it's
about
technical
the old
stuff,
days, but
we're here. And we're here to answer
absolutely.
Questions. And, you know, it's so anyway. Okay, everybody. Well, look, have a blessed week, and we'll see you here next time on Federal Prison Authority Presents Around the Block. Take care, everybody. Have a great week. See you next time.
Take care. Bye bye.
You're listening to Federal Prison Authority Presents Around the Block with Bruce Cameron and Susan Giddings, only on LA Talk Radio.